ですね。
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. And again, our apologies for not starting at the time. Now we're delayed by technology. When I wanted to know what are the benefits of technology when it was introduced about how many years, 25 years ago, when I wanted to do it, I was told that it makes your life very easy. Everything is just chup-chup. Now we can start. We are still waiting for the people that are trying to connect, and they will indicate if they are ready, so that I hope 2 minutes will be sufficient. My understanding that all of us have got copies. If technology is still making things difficult, I think the presentation can be done as using copies. In welcoming everybody, what we will do, what we usually do, is that we introduce one another so that we know who is here. So that's what we will do now, and if technology is still making things difficult, I think that we can get a presentation through our documents, because we do have our documents, all of us with us. Having said that, I am Lindelwa Dunjwa, the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Health. On my left is Committee Secretary Ms. Yokaz Machalambu. I don't see other people. On the extreme left, right at the bottom, we've got Lindo Kuhle, who is our content advisor and our researcher, who is Zubere. You must give me your second name. I have given up. If you don't want to use your other name, unfortunately, I can't give you my other name, because I don't want you to know my other name. Otherwise, this one I've given up, and I must be charged by the committee for not being able. Who is our researcher? We will then start on the left. For honourable members to introduce themselves, and also ladies and gentlemen who are from the department, and every other person who is a visitor in our committee. Over to you, honourable members.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning to everybody. My name is Vishnu Sari.
Good morning. My name is Maureen Cooper, a member of the Ofcom.
Good morning. I'm Lundiswa James, member of this committee.
Hello, Wilma James, member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm Harry Cronin, member of this committee.
Secondo, I'm from PMG.
Good morning, colleagues and members of Parliament. I'm Moses Mwari. I'm a researcher in the economy.
Thank you very much. We've got Lindo Kuhle, who's our committee assistant.
Mbali,
I'm sorry. I don't know. There's something that the whip of the committee is saying everybody is Lindo Kuhle, and I don't want to say it because Lindo Kuhle is coming from his own province, which I won't disclose. We have got another member that is as he's trying to get his seat. And I want to apologize in advance for him. I can assure you he was getting lost in this. It's your turn, Honorable Member, to introduce yourself. Honorable Member, please introduce yourself.
I think we should buy the honourable member GPS.
Thank you very much, Honourable James. That would be a very good idea. Thank you. All right. Let us start. Whoever is going to make a presentation, it's over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. Firstly, the DG intended to be here today, but because of other things, she couldn't. So just to introduce the team again, Dr. Zungu, who's on my right, is the director responsible for the Medical Bureau of Occupational Diseases. And then we have Ms. Pradesi, who will be doing the presentation today on the CCCD. And then we have Ms. Sam Malutsi, who is the director of finance. To start off, I think it's important just to set a context around the CCOD or BOD. It is a unit within the National Department of Health, and it reports into my branch, which is Program 6. We historically had the Medicare Bureau of Occupational Diseases and the CCOD as separate units in the department, but as part of the reform of trying to improve the functioning of the unit, it seemed logical that we should merge the courses. That's why you see the top of the presentation in BOD last season. So frankly, we merged the two, given that the activities are closely related. So I think Ms. Pradesi will go through that and give you a sense of how we've been trying to do that. The staff within the MBOD or CCOD are employees of the National Department of Health. The only difference between this unit and other units within the National Department of Health is that this unit has a trading account, and the trading account is used to be to compensate minors who qualify for compensation. And that account operates independently of the National Department of Health. So I thought it was important just to set that context so that you understand the way the MBD CCD operates. It's not an entity the traditional way like we presented in MRC, so there's no board, etc. None of the employees are employees of the National Department of Health. Chair, I was now going to ask Ms. Pradesi to do a presentation on the performance plan, and I think colleagues will then come in and join us at the rest of the MRC.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee. Thank you for this opportunity. May I at the onset just apologize to you, Honorable Chairperson, that in your presentation the last two slides have got some adjustments in terms of figures, numbers. So I'm apologizing that was not there. We couldn't get that to you on time, but it's the last two slides I'm referring to on the budget. Having said that, Honorable Chairperson, some of the issues on the slides, you'll see that they're quite voluminous. So I'm going to take you through those issues that you may, that we would find that you need to know about in terms of our overall planning within the, what we call the occupational health cluster that's made up of the MBOD, the Medical Bureau for Occupational Disease, and the CCOD, which is the Compensation Commission for Occupational Disease. So those two units form this cluster, which is called the Occupational Health Cluster. We are situated at number 144 Deportivo Street in Braamfontein, Johannesburg, and we are the satellite office of the National Department of Health. So the reason for us being located there is it's in terms of the proximity of our claimants and our patients that come, it's easier for access for them to come to Johannesburg than it is in Pretoria. So that's the reason for the situation at that part of the world. We are going to take you through a little bit of our history, the diagnostics of our problems, our strat plan, our annual performance plan, our way forward and our conclusion, and my colleagues that are here will assist with answering some of the questions that you may have. This is in terms of our history. It's a 102-year-old history. We started off with the Minor Crisis Act 19 of 1912. For those of you who follow the history in terms of this. So in summary, we're looking at our problem in terms of governance. This is how we have structured ourselves. We've got governance, we've got the claims management, our service delivery, our infrastructure, and our sustainability. We're looking at multiple fronts in terms of the industry, and we're also going to talk about our potential for change. That's coming out of the Auditor General's report in terms of the areas that we need to do and what are some of the promises we want to make. About 20 months ago, we looked at these interventions. Currently, we now have a unified management structure that's made up of the Medical Bureau and the Compensation Commissioner. Honorable members, let me allow me to indicate to you that previous to this, we had two buildings housing both these organizations. Although they operate under one act, the one was in 144 DeCourcy Street and the other one was in Smith Street. But they were doing the same kind of work, one fed into the other, the MBOD fed into the CCOD. Currently, all activities are now in one building, and we have absolute support from the National Department of Health. And under these circumstances, we were able to develop our track plan and our annual performance plan. In terms of our strategic plan, 2013 to 2015, this plan combines the Compensation Commissioner and the Medical Bureau for Occupational Diseases, and we call and the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act, that's the ODIMWA Act. However, we need to indicate that this act is very old and is currently in the process of undergoing amendments because this act was promulgated in 1973, and much of what is in the act currently now is actually obsolete. In terms of our STRAP plan, our vision is therefore an accessible and effective occupational health system and services that ensure the compensation of workers and their beneficiaries. Our mission is the enhancement of the health system to prevent occupational diseases and to provide services. What are the policy initiatives that we've undertaken? It's the amendments to the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act that I just spoke about. Expanding the coverage of controlled mines and works. Currently, Honorable Chairperson, we only have 249 of the mines that are controlled mines, which by definition means that only 249 mines are paying levies. We can only collect by the law levies from a mine that is controlled. So the provision of decentralized service for workers and ex-workers, that's our one-stop facility. And we've got two demonstration sites that have been opened on the 7th of April and the 29th of April. The 7th of April was the opening of the demonstration site in Umtata. And on the 29th of April, we opened a demonstration site in Carsonville. And the reason for the first one opening in the Eastern Cape was because it's by far the largest labor sending area in terms of miners. We also get to look. We also exploring models for service delivery within and outside of South Africa, because in terms of the miners and the ex-miners, the workforce does not come solely from the Republic. We're looking at alignment of compensation between the Department of Labour and Treasury, so that we do not have a differential system in the department. I want to take us back in terms of our past performance. There was the issue of poor performance that we had from the Auditor General in terms of annual reports, compliance management, and the administration covered by the Department of Health is actually we're sitting at 34.4 million, which is actually 1.4% of the fund value. So in terms of the compensation fund, which stands at 2.6 billion, we have four accounts within the compensation fund, which is the mines account, the works account, the state account, and the research account. And 336 million forms the revenue, and 149 million is what we deal with in terms of expenditure. The compensation commission, the compensation for occupational diseases, that's for workers and ex-workers in controlled mines and works, added up to 140 million. Pensions were 2.9 million. The reason this figure is low, Honorable Chair, is because the pensioners are all over. Some of them are even abroad. So tracking and tracing pensioners often becomes a challenge. Therefore, the number that's indicated there is 188 pensioners. On the Eastern Cape project, we had allocated 34 million to pay 14,000 claimants. We must indicate, Honorable Chair, that we have paid the 14,000 claimants. However, we still have another 4,000 claimants outstanding, and the reason for us not being able to pay the 4,000 is it was very difficult to trace this. And we are still in the process of engaging various resources to help us trace the ex-miners to pay them the outstanding amount. And we have problems in terms of the actuarial valuation. In respect of our past performance, in terms of the MBOD, that's the Medical Bureau for Occupational Diseases, this particular unit of ours has had no annual report since the year 2000. It conducts medical examinations of workers and ex-workers. We have 186 service providers outside of the Department of Health. That's our private doctors as well as our provincial hospitals. And these 186 service providers are situated all over the Republic. We also do in the Medical Bureau, we have a review committee and we have a certification committee. And we also deal with training and outreach at our provincial hospital. And our risk committee that is supposed to be functional was actually non-functional since 1998. And it is this particular committee that actually declares more mines as controlled mines than were. Our goal, first of all, is to make policy and legislative changes, just in terms of the old act, to improve our governance, to optimize our management, to enhance service delivery, to ensure sustainability of the compensation fund, and last but not least is to conduct research. Our strategic objective, therefore, is to have policy and legislative changes, to implement the strategic plan, to improve corporate governance through our various committees, to reorganize claims administration, to consolidate our outreach activities, to ensure financial sustainability, to develop a surveillance system, to conduct appropriate research, and to assess the human resource, technical, and infrastructural needs. So when we look at the section on governance, the governance section is looking at the different committees. The first is the advisory and the audit and risk committee, which exists in the Compensation Commission of Occupational Diseases. We have the certification, review, and joint committee as part of the Medical Bureau of Occupational Diseases, the risk committee with the MBOD. Then we have internal committees within the organization dealing with health and safety, equity and skills, and internal audit, and we also have our service providers. Our claims administration and service delivery, we have a registry. This is how the section is broken up. We have a registry. This registry quantifies the number of files we deal with. Honorable Chair, previously what we had was because the organizations, like I explained, were one in DeForest Street and the other one in Smith Street, you'll find that when a patient comes, a file will be opened on this side in DeForest Street, and when it has to go to payment, another file will be opened there. And eventually we had a huge amount of paperwork. So as from the beginning of 2013, we've merged the CCOB and MBOD files. So that's what I refer to when I'm talking about the merge. We've currently taken our files out of the offices into what we call into our storage outside of the office. And part of that kind of work is to look at verifying the data in the files to see that everybody has all the information they need, and to sort the files out in terms of the year, the claim type, etc., so that we have a proper registry system with a fully functional database. Inspection of mines and works. We have a database of 249 controlled mines and works, and we are looking at linking our IT system, our registry, our mine worker system, and our accounting system in terms of that. Honorable members, the inspection of mines and works was a function that was assigned to us. However, it was not functional for a long time. So we've started with the inspection of mines and works, Honorable Chair and members, as from 2013 in October, and we are covering quite considerable ground in terms of the inspection of mines and works, and we're dealing with the reconciliation of the system. What are we doing in terms of outreach and awareness? This is taking place in various forms. The first one is the involvement in various forums. That is, we participate in health, in labor, in mineral resources, with our development partners. We also attend conferences and workshops. We've also had several meetings with trade unions and employer groups. Through our inspections, there is continuing professional development of health professionals, and we have links to the provincial health departments and district health services, and we have links to Parliament and its outreach activities. When it comes to the compensation fund, Honorable Melik, we're looking at, one, ensuring a functional risk committee that's dealing with dust, vapors, gases, or any other factor affecting our risk. We're also looking at our revenue, and that's the assessment and collection of levies to be at its maximum, as well as looking at our investments. On the inspections, we are looking at the verification of data, that's the risk shifts, the contractors, and the prevention and prevention interventions. We are saying this because a lot of mines, we've had mines that closed down that do not tell us in terms of the act. We've also had lots of risk shifts that have been undertaken by the mines, and there are different levies to be paid in terms of all those different areas of work within the mine. We're then looking at we need to correct the base for the actuarial valuation, which was part of what our AG report had told us, and we're in the process of doing that. And and we're looking at the expansion of the base for the control lines in the world. Now, our actuarial valuation depends on our base. We're making reference here to our triangle that's on the right-hand side of the screen. In terms of this base, we have the CCOD and the MBOD that's outside the system. And we do not know, you know, in terms of the actual value, what's the number of X workers, how many mines are there. We're estimating it to be about 500,000 workers that are in there. Then you've got the MBOD, and we're looking at claimants to the point of 1.1 million. And then we've had 200,000 CCOD. So this is the kind of determination that we'd like to verify and find out what is the exact value of all of this, which for us is very important in terms of determination of the actuarial valuation. And this depends on the disease process, whether it's the latency, more than one disease, etc., that will accompany that. In terms of the occupational injury, we're looking at the abrupt break-in, the agent-host-environment balance, and what is the cause that is established. And my colleagues here will answer questions if you want to elaborate more on these slides. In terms of our occupational diseases, we either have cases not diagnosed or misdiagnosed. There is seriously a lack of knowledge. Sometimes it is marked by other diseases. We have a question of long lags in time. We need special investigations into some of these. And finally, it's also difficult to find the cause of some of these problems. On the surveillance issue, it's important for us to look at our data for action. What is it we're actually looking for? The ongoing systematic collection, the analysis and interpretation of data for planning, implementation, and for evaluation. We need this kind of surveillance system. The following slide is giving you some history, which you can read in terms of the graph that we put up there in terms of the surveillance data. And the next slide deals with trends in mine fatality rates, and it's giving you the metal, the year, and the issues over there, which again you can read at your own leisure. This slide is speaking, Honorable Chairperson, to the fatality and how it is that in South Africa we have a high fatality incidence, whereas similar industries and mines in other countries, like Australia, for instance, has actually got lower injury incidences as compared to ourselves. This is the disease type and number of claimants per province. Again, it's here for your information. And you will see that our highest burden is actually in the Eastern Cape and in the Free State. And by country, you'll see that South Africa actually ranks the highest, you know, followed very closely by Lesotho, but still almost halfway down the line. In terms of our research, we have, we're looking at risks in mines and work, the scientific approach to valuation, the quantification of numbers of workers and ex-workers at risk and modeling studies, and the operational research that models for delivery. So there are several areas, Honorable Chairperson and members, that we want to look at in terms of our research work. Now, our human resource technical and infrastructural needs, first of all, is based on our strategic plan. We have a need for legal, accounting, economic, actuarial, health, and social science, and logistics people, because what we have currently in terms of the HR and expertise at the occupational health cluster is very administrative. So that second point is actually speaking to the professional services needed within the cluster in order to give action to the slides that I presented just now. On the technical side, we have information systems and technology, digital x-rays, the gene expert, the lung function, and the financial models. Even in this one, we are not on top of these issues because we do not have all of the systems that I'm referring to over here. We have inherited some systems that are pretty outdated, and we're in the process through our business process re-engineering to become more technically efficient. On infrastructure, our buildings, vehicles, and equipment, we also have decentralized services, and we've got to look at how we equip all of that, and looking at the training and capacity building for the entire unit. In terms of our 2014-15 annual performance plan, We are intending to look at policy and legislative changes. The first and most important is to give impetus to the changes in the Act and to actually look at the whole amendment. I would call it a rewriting of the of a Gilmore, because 1973 is pretty long ago when this was done. The second thing is the implementation of a strategic plan in respect of governance and management. On service delivery, we're looking at the reorganization of claims administration, improving our outreach activities, and like in the previous slide, looking at an overhaul of the HR, professional services, technical, and our infrastructural needs. On the sustainability of the compensation fund, we are hoping through our inspections to look at the issues of the levy and the inspections, and from the last two issues is the surveillance system and the appropriate research that I pointed out that needs to be done. The occupational health services, our core function, first and foremost, is to look at prevention. And in prevention, we're looking at our risk identification. The recognition of high-risk groups and priorities. We're also looking at health promotion, that's the optimal physical and mental health and our healthy lifestyle. Our curative services, that's our general practice levels, our referrals to specialists and our first aid, and our rehabilitation and compensation. On our rehabilitation and compensation, we're working very closely with the Department of Labor in order to provide these services, particularly at our two demonstration sites. So we are following the conceptual model of the delivery of service as envisaged within the NHI, and that's through the various district health hospitals and the classification of our hospital service. There is an occupational health service model, which is how do we fit into all of this, and this slide actually speaks to the issues we want to raise in the occupational health service model. Now, in terms of our demonstration sites, demonstration sites have been, I'm looking at the first slide on my left, right at the top. That is the beginning of the demonstration site at Carltonville. It's now completed. The next slide is actually to show how advanced we can become if we have to use digital X-ray. That is the digital X-ray unit at Umtata. The bottom left is speaking about our rehabilitation unit, which is there at Umtata, at the Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital. And the last slide on my right at the bottom is the completed demonstration site, which is at Umtata. The reason why you see just two buildings over there, the Carltonville one is bigger than this one, because these two buildings actually feed into an integrated service within the Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital. So the rehabilitation services and all most of the medical services are actually integrated within the hospital. At Carltonville, that is the picture on the top left, that facility that is now completed has three of those buildings on the ground in the Carltonville hospital, and they are servicing X-minors in that particular area. It's now completed and it's functional. In respect of our budget, the Occupational Health Plus, the National Department of Health, covers the HR issues and the running costs for both the HR personnel, as well as the running costs of the department, the occupational health cluster. The compensation fund, this is what the DDG was referring to, the trading entity in the Department of Health, and they are, as the fund there is basically used in those four accounts, its primary purpose is actually in the payment of claims. This, Honorable Chairperson and members, is the occupational health budget. The slide that I told you had some information missing, that's here. This is the budget moving forward. This is what we get from the Department of Health, and starting with 12-13, and even up to the last year, 15-16, this is the expenditure, and this is what we get the income from the Department of Health. This slide speaks to our staff establishment as of July 2014, and we have 140 members of staff. Our support staff that you will see in the third column from the right speaks to 127, but you'll find of the 127, we only have 14 management posts that are filled, and that's the management. We've actually got the professional services that we speak about, which do not form part of this organogram at all. So that's something that needs to be actually factored into the organogram in terms of ongoing professional services.
compensation fund. This is the figures in terms of the compensation fund that takes me up to the outer years of 15-16. And the fund value currently in this particular year is sitting at about 2.6 billion. And thereabouts the fund value, and there we have indicated to you our investment, what's our revenue, and what's our expenditure. Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. We'll be glad to answer questions.
Thank you very much. I will then allow honorable members to get some clarities and questions. I don't want to start because I've got quite a huge basket full of questions, but I will start with honorable members. Would you please, honorable member, before you speak, introduce yourself. Honorable Musale, honorable Maisele, honorable Ndaba, honorable Volmik, in that order.
Or to source the skills that you need, and because as a result of that, you're hampered in your activities. So maybe if you can explain what you intend doing about it, when and how. Thank you.
Honorable Ndaba.
the challenges that you've had in the past, but there are still points, as Honorable Dawa has said, that are of concern. So the first is, in terms of the presentation, we have a snapshot of your SOG establishment, and you've mentioned that there are deficiencies. My question is, what is, firstly, this is a snapshot, so it's static. It would be nice to see what the turnover rate is. And if there's been a high turnover rate, what are the reasons for that? Because, you know, we can bring in new staff, but if they're just hemorrhaging out again, then we need to deal with perhaps some internal issues. That's the first one. The second one is that your presentation is geared towards addressing problems in at the MVRD, which is fine, but we haven't yet seen a clear, cogent vision of what you intend to establish in this organization. So where do you want to go? Have you looked at international best practices models? You know, what is it that you want to create through in terms of this organization? And then linked to that, looking at your budget, do you feel your resources, as a sufficiency stand, are sufficient to accomplish that? Because, I mean, part of the role of this committee is obviously to look at budgets. So we would need to have that information. Then just in terms of the points that have been raised around the legislation, obviously there has to, as Honorable Masala said, there has to be a harmonization of legislation. And so, just to preempt perhaps recommendations that you may have in terms of what those amendments could look like, do you feel that that ultimately the entire compensation system should rest in the Department of Health in new legislation, or should be migrated to the Department of Labour? And then also, do you believe that in the new legislation the private sector should play a larger role in terms of contributing to the compensation?
No, thanks, Chair, and also welcome the presentation. Just a few clarifying questions arising from the presentation as well as the issues that the members have discussed and emphasized on. Can you clarify to us who are you? And I'm still struggling to understand why. Because in the departmental strategic plan, you are listed as an entity. That's what the strategic plan says. But when you are making a presentation, you say no, you are housed, you're part of the department, a sub program. You then have your own budget. The budget is part of the department. Which is program six, and a part of that sub-program. But very interesting, you have got your own vision. Is it working like that? A program, or a sub-program within a department, have its own vision, got your own mission, which are not linked and related to the vision and the mission of the department in which you belong, which you are a program of, not an entity. That's why I get confused whether you are an entity or you are a program or a sub-program within the department. If you can just clarify ourselves so that we understand, are you a program or a sub-program, or are you an entity? And the Auditor General as firstly, we have been receiving disclaimers and in some instances no financial statements you are able to submit. Is it for the account that you are managing that you are unable to submit financial statements, and what are the reasons behind your failure to submit a financial statement to the Auditor General in relation to those accounts? Are they difficult to manage? What are the financial management challenges that you are finding yourself? To be in a position not to account on those accounts as required by And as Honorable Ndaba said, you have not been able to submit the annual report. I'm not sure, that's why I'm saying, I'm not sure you are an entity or part of the department. Because if you are part of the department, then it means when the department submits its annual report, you become part of it. I understand they're saying, no, you're not. The last time you submitted the annual report was in 2000. If you are required to submit an annual report, and you are not an entity, let's move from that premises first. What informs you that you must then submit an annual report, if you are not an entity, if you are part of the department? And if you are an entity, what informs you, what informs your existence beyond just the Act? Because that Act was established in 1973. And at the time, there was no PFMA, there was nothing. And therefore, was it established as an entity, or was it established as a commission within the department that must deal with these issues that you are dealing with? And then how do you relate it being part of the entity vis-à-vis being part of the... If you can just clarify, so that we understand. Because in the 82 of the department, it's only two targets that the department has raised. And they are also, and they are not measurable in terms of quarterly performance. There are only two, is the enhancement of the governance structure to improve the audit outcome. But there's nothing that the department said on a quarterly basis, this is what we are going to do to turn the situation around so that we're in a position to improve. And also in your report here, there's nothing that tells us what is it that you are going to be doing on a quarterly basis to be in a position to turn the situation around so that you are in a position to improve governance, to improve the audit outcome at the end of the financial year. And then the second one is the establishment of the occupational health services in Eastern Cape and Gauteng. Though there are no quarterly targets, what is that you'll be doing on a quarterly basis to make sure that these are established so that at the end of the year, when on a quarterly basis you're in a position to update us, or the department is in a position to update us on progress that you are making in relation to this year. So that's why, Chair, I've got the difficulty in understanding the role, because I'm not sure whether you are an entity or you are a sub-program within the Department of Health. And therefore, if you are a sub-program within the Department of Health, it means the person that is accountable is the DG. That's what it means. If you're an entity, there must be somebody who's accountable in terms of the law that establishes you. And who is that person that we must hold accountable for the performance and non-performance of this entity or sub-program?
Honorable Skipper.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think mine would be in addition to the question of the Honorable Maitsema. I would like to know what informs the control of the 249 mine. I would also like to know, is it going to remain 249? What do you envisage in the future? Is it going to remain 249? Will you be able to deal with more? But what informs actually the 249? Because as the Honorable Member said, there are so many mines, but they only have control on over 249.
That's just other questions that have been covered by Honorable Members. But it's just a few. You talked about the involvement of private doctors in public health. Question from me, I would have loved to get the actual number. How many private doctors are involved in this? And two, how many public institutions are designated, or a patient can just wake up and go to Livingstone Hospital in the Eastern Cape? I'm making an example. I would have thought that because of the magnitude and the seriousness of this conversation, there should be designated institutions with medical practitioners that are well equipped in doing that. The gap that I'm getting, and you will have to make me understand, I'm of the understanding that when you apply for any type of work, there is what is called a medical form that you must fill. I'm raising this because TB, among others, is an airborne disease. I may come and work in Parliament having contracted TB, but this, now we're talking about mine workers. I am not getting here. I don't know whether it doesn't fall within you because there is somewhere in the slides where you talk about people that are in the risk having contracted TB within 12 months having worked. What happened if somebody is employed coming in suffering from TB? That's why the question that says, do you in mine workers, or it depends on the category. It's I'm very much interested in this because it means that there is some serious challenges in the mining sector. It's quite workers that are to be compensated. Our workers, majority of them, that unfortunately, not because of their own making, are illiterate. Not because of their own making. Poor, coming from rural areas. I am coming from a province where majority of these workers are being are vulnerable to any form of confusion. It's beside, I'm coming to the compensation. There's a lot of confusion. I think it's a question similar to what, closer to what Comrade, I'm sorry, Honorable Ndaba has raised. I may be repeating that. I'm not getting here a program that is dedicated in ensuring that you go out and speak with the beneficiaries and the ex-mine workers. You compensate beneficiaries on which is it like in the medical aid, or is it because again TB is so that's where my concern is. And honourable members in the Eastern Cape, and anybody can come up and create expectations on issues that, in fact, you may know that is not happening. The last question on my side is that I see your staffing. Honourable Mahlalela spoke about governance and whatever. There's no indication here. When do you think you are going to fill in this post? There's no indication whatsoever. Whereas you are in such a very complex, complicated, and a serious environment. So I get a sense that you, and because of that, and you will pardon me, and there's no other area where I can say this, I get a sense that, okay, fine, we'll do with whatever we are having. And that is a challenge to me, because as you are not concerned of either ensuring that posts are filled, or say we want to increase the number of staff, we want to do APCG because this area is quite a complex area. I'm saying this with passion because right across in all provinces there are people that are really brutal. The last one is, how do you trace the compensation on the border outside Lesotho, Mozambique, Swaziland? How do you go in there? Who, what is the machinery or the mechanism that you are having in ensuring that even beneficiaries from those areas, but that is silent. My apologies if I have missed it. It's only concentrating on the number of people here. If then both parents passed on, like a mother and a father, who falls in the category of a beneficiary? Is it the wife and he and the children, or is it only my husband and the wife? The last one on compensation, what happens? Do you have any legislation, or is it covered by the legislation on the, you know, that there is what is called common marriage, common law marriage, and what happens in that? If a person has got more than five wives, are they all? Those are the things I'm asking those questions, because those are the things that we're confronted with when we go to our communities, and this area is quite a very, very sensitive area. Thank you. It's your time to respond. How you respond depends entirely on you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member, for all the questions. I think that the team will deal with it. Dr. Zungu will deal with the questions and then talk about the clinical issues of the administration and the compensation aspect. Maybe just to clarify the position of the CCOD because of the confusion. Given that the CCOD holds a trading account and there was no other place to present that, it could present it as an entity, but in reality it's not classified by trading. So I suppose best described as being misplaced in terms of wage and price. The targets in terms of the performance targets of the CCOD and UOD are incorporated into the department targets that you will see from the annual report of last financial year 2013-14. There are a number of targets that the CCOD is committed to performing against. So there's a target around number of mine workers and fixed mine workers that undergo benefit medical examination, the number that they compensated, the number that they identified, the inspection of mines, etc., are all performance targets in there. So I think maybe going forward we must find a better way of expressing it, because it's currently causing confusion. I think it's because of the structural arrangement. Hopefully when we make amendments to the Act, it's going to be very clear on how we deal with this. And I think the other question around, is it logical that we have this fragmented system of Department of Labor being responsible for some organs, if I can put it that way, and us being responsible for the lungs only? Doesn't make sense, because patients are not being able to testify for it. And so I think given this old Act, we need to certainly reform it so that it becomes easier for miners and ex-miners to be compensated for their activity. I'll hand over to Dr. Zungu first to deal with the clinical issues and then suggest the comments.
Sorry, we're just going to run through the operational issues, and then I will ask my colleagues, Dr. Zungu and Ms. Sam, to answer the medical financial questions. So I'm going to run through it in the order that you've asked the questions, and let's see how best we answer it, and help to give information in respect of the various issues. So let me start with the first question, the contribution of the mining sector. At the moment, if you look at the way the Act is structured, the levy is what's coming from the mining sector. So in terms of the 249, let us be very frank and open with members, the honourable members here, because your levies are determined by the metal that is being mined. And currently, in terms of the way the act, the old act is structured, one would expect that the greater the quantity of the metal, the higher the levy should be. You know, but take gold as an example. You'll find that they are paying about the lowest as compared to a category within the act that is termed other. Now, the other is referring to your chrome, and these are smaller mines, but they pay about the highest levy. So the only recourse we have right now is that it's not the state that, in a way, yes, the state is carrying the burden, because we are dealing with compensation, like the DDG has explained. We're dealing with the compensation issues in respect of the miners and the ex-miners. But there's also the issue of COIDA, and that becomes the Department of Labor. But if a person who has been injured on duty comes to us, and this person has, you know, intubated or external injury and so forth, it becomes very inhumane to say to this person, please go now to another office. We are supposed to compensate, but that's part of the amendment we're talking about. Ultimately, though, sir, we believe that compensation issues should actually belong to the Department of Labor. You know, we should deal with all the medical, you know, clinical issues, all of the issues surrounding the care of the patient. But when it comes to compensation, I would think the vision overall for all of us should be that it should belong to one section. You know, and we are in discussion around those issues with the Department of Labor. I trust I'm answering your question around that in terms of the burden of the state carrying that. We cannot force the mines. Let me just say this is coming through in various questions. The 249 mines that we are talking about is from a total of about 1,300 plus, approximately. I'm saying approximately because currently we're supposed to have DMRs that should be giving you the proper database, you know, of how many mines are there in the country. However, it's not correct that they do not have a database. It's just that you've got mines closing, reopening under other names. It's an industry out there that's so challenging, you know. So today they can be Kruandel, tomorrow they're something else, and then they've got a number of other issues within the site chairperson, you know, that is causing that kind of confusion. The ultimate vision that we would like is to see all mines controlled. You know, because if you look at the number of mines, and if you look at the number of people who may claim compensation, if they come currently, all of them come, hypothetically, the current budget will not carry the payment of that kind of expenditure. So you will need to have more control mines. I think, ma'am, you were asking the same kind of question. So it's not really half and half. You can see 249 is a small number in terms of the bigger picture. Now, there is a committee called the Risk Committee that's supposed to be the active committee that's chaired actually by the Department of by DMR, you know, the chairperson. And that committee, we've resuscitated that committee now. And that is the committee that Dr. Zungu will speak to as well. Now, that committee has the jurisdiction to declare more mines controlled mines. You know, so those are the processes we're talking about in actually reactivating, resuscitating those issues. So that's how I would, you know, put that to you. So it's not two regimes. We're talking about trying to incorporate this to become one. You know, so compensation becomes Department of Labor. And we need to look at all the legislative issues that surround that. So you've got DMR, for instance, you've got DOL, and you've got DOH. The idea currently that we are working on since 2013 and a little bit before, the latter part of 2012, is to see how all of these can actually become one. And, you know, you have compensation here, you've got injuries here, and, you know, the assessments and the inspectors and so forth. So I think those are the kind of areas that we are tapping into. I think I've answered the question on half control and half not control. It's not really true. It's the 249 out of there. So you're asking in terms of a lack of skills. Is there a plan to source the skills, when and how? Yes, honorable members. We first of all had to identify that we have a skills shortage because the entire organization was built purely on a lot of administrative support staff. But if you look at what actually you want to achieve out of the fund, and its desired objectives, you need people who can actually become, you need lawyers, you need people who can do your actuarial evaluation. So So all of that. So we have submitted to our head office our plan, and the DDG, the CFO are all aware, together with the DG, and we're in a process now, and I'm certain you are well aware that, you know, we've got to go through the process of the DPSA, you know, to actually put these things on the organogram and then have them pass through. So it's work well underway, and we hope very soon that we would have some kind of an organogram that would speak to the different skills that we would want, you know, within the organization itself. Currently, whilst we don't have them on the organogram, we are getting these skills from the Department of Health, our own organization, wherever possible, and we're also borrowing the skills from other departments, you know, in terms of how to best utilize us in the process of how the organogram is getting forward and getting to that. An interesting question on the services, you know, within the CCOG, how are we telling the community? Honorable members, let me assure you that it is our passion to tell the communities out there. Because one of the biggest things we found out, Honorable Chairperson, is that the people in the communities do not know. They do not know what is it we are doing, you know. And we take every opportunity to go and speak to workers and ex-workers in their various communities. We have covered large sections of the Eastern Cape. We've gone to most of the rural villages in the Eastern Cape. We've equally gone to meetings, mass meetings that have been convened. We've gone to events organized by communities, and we've spread the message. We've developed pamphlets in the various languages. I think most importantly, we've got to speak the language of the people in the community so that they understand what is happening. Because in the main, the majority of workers or ex-workers in the mines are black disadvantaged workers who, it is true, are largely illiterate. And there are people who are exploiting the situation, Honorable Chairperson. And I want to just assure the committee that, or inform the committee rather, that just in the province of the Eastern Cape, where you've got the largest labor sending area, the people have actually seen this as an opportune moment to exploit our workers further than what has happened so far by the employers. And that is to form so-called unions, you know, of ex-mine workers. And each of them actually go out there exploiting workers further. They will tell them that they need to come to Bramfontein, for instance, and there will be like a ready-made handout of a package of money for them. And so they siphon out all the money from the family, and most of these are widows, you know, and they bring them in very, very terrible conditions of travel, you know, buses and taxis and whatever, park them somewhere in Johannesburg over a period of 3 or 4 days until we as the department had to identify the problem and alert the police and have some of these people on the road, Jefferson, and members arrested for them. Because a single trip from Butterworth to Bramfontein nets in something like around about 73,000 to 81,000 for the so-called, you know, union who's doing this, until we had to arrest it. Under those circumstances, we had to push ahead for the demonstration sites to be open so that our people don't have to come from Butterworth to Bramfontein, but we must have a service closer to them where they can actually go and get the same service, literally the same service. Why should they come all the way to Bramfontein? So that's one of the ways in which we're trying to reach out to communities. But Honorable Chair and members, let me assure you, we're only touching the tip of the iceberg. There is so much yet to be done in terms of outreach activities. And we would appreciate it that if Honorable Members and yourself, dear Chair, want and can identify the need in certain communities, we are more than willing to come out and do that kind of outreach work. We've got sufficient teams to go out. We are starting a full range of outreach activities from the 9th of September going up to the 10th of October, and that's covering all 9 provinces in respect of that. I trust, ma'am, you know, that you'll be able to assist us. And we will, through you, Chair, and your Secretary of Services, give you the list of places we're going to so that, you know, you would be able to then tell us who else can we reach out in respect of this. In terms of the amendments to the Act, we have been reliably informed, Honourable Chair and Members, that well, there is a process in terms of amending the Act. And in the way the Act stands currently, we would think we've got to rewrite the whole Act, because 1973 is a long time, you know. And if you look at amendments, you're going to be amending every line, so to speak. You know, so it's best we rewrite the act. So we've engaged ourselves together with the relevant departments, and we've started the process. Remember, we've got to give notice to the person dealing with government business, the deputy president's intention to do this. So within the next 2 or 3 weeks, you will have that. And we are working on the actual amendment. If it serves members of the committee to see what the initial amendments are, Chair will be more than willing to share it with you, and you can share it with the members so that you can see what the kind of amendments are, because ultimately we've got to look at yourselves as well in terms of how you feed into that process of the amendment of the Act. And I think if we have to look at a vision and a priority for the department, that would be one of our priorities, is to amend the Act. Because a lot of it right now, I can give you an example of something that's exploiting our workers, is that just the travel cost for ex-miners to come to get examined and to get their benefits, there are rates that are outdated and so old. So a person coming from the Eastern Cape, for instance, actually gets compensated coming from Johannesburg to Grampton, whereas they should be compensated from the Eastern Cape to us. Why should they only be compensated from there? So the Act in itself remains still very differential, and we want to correct those issues that we plagued by the past into that, because 1973 was way before 1994. So you can imagine how much work we've got to do there. Mr. Mulawsi will answer the question of why the 150 out of the 10,000, Sam, when it comes to your issues there. And my colleague, Dr. Zungu, here will speak to you about the certification committee and what happens there. And equally, the financial statement, Sam, if you could speak to that together with the CFO. Thank you, Honourable Member, for appreciating the work that we've done so far. And in terms of our staff establishment, our turnover rate, I would think, a lot of our support staff currently that's in the department, the turnover rate is purely through attrition, or a basis of requesting a transfer from Johannesburg to Pretoria. That's basically it, as far as I know, for the past year and a half that I'm there. But your professional staff, like your doctor, for instance, is not a sustainable kind of thing, because if you look at it, a doctor coming there and to be full-time, the salary level at which the doctor is pitched is pretty low. So the same point, in terms of what the doctor would earn normally outside is not sustainable within the department. So as a result, yes, the turnover rate there is quite high. So in the 22 months that I am there, Honourable Chairperson, I've seen a doctor there as the director of the MBOD, who resigned within 2 months, and then we've had another doctor appointed in January of 2014, who equally resigned after 3 months. The post then got advertised. We have looked for a doctor. We've now identified a doctor, but we're constantly exploiting this man on my left, because he's coming in as the acting director all the time, to carry the burden of what we're having over there. The issue is, it's not so much a person staying, but it's the implication of the person not staying. Because the backlog that you read about in the certification committee, that certification committee has to be chaired by a medical doctor who is the director of the MBOD. That's what the Act is saying. Now, if we do not have a doctor, then it means the certification committee comes to a standstill. Can you see then the rise in the backlog? So we're hoping, ma'am, that by early September we'll have the director appointed. So that is the only turnover rate, and it's to attract the medical personnel. I think that's basically there, but I'm certain that jointly we can find some solutions to those issues. Are our resources sufficient? On a lighthearted side, I don't know who ever says they are sufficient. They are never sufficient, And we definitely have resource challenges, and one of it would be, like I'm talking to you about, the compensation for the medical personnel. If you have sufficient resources, you can pay people. Or, if you had to go back to the question that has been asked repeatedly by members, trading entity or not a trading entity, But so long as you are in the department, then the public service governs your terms and conditions of service. As an entity, you can decide your salary, but in the public service, there's a ceiling, and there is a start point. So I can't go and say to a doctor, look, you can get paid 1.5 million when the PPSA rates are much lower than that. you know, so there are governance issues that govern us interdepartmentally. So on the legislation that you're asking, which needs to be harmonized, do you think the entire you know, compensation should be with the DOH? I think I've answered that basically, you know, and our work with the DOL. Clarify who we are. You know, are we an entity? I thought the DDG tried to give some explanation to that in terms of who are we, and we are working on that in terms of getting a specific definition of exactly who we are, so there's no confusion around the table. Sam will talk to you about the disclaimers together with the CFO. Is it the account? What's the reason for the failure, etc., Ian and Sam? And why we were unable to submit annual reports. But let me just say on the non-submission of annual reports, honorable members, you know, when we started the business process re-engineering of the CPOB and VOB, we realized there were so many things that we were missing. And as a result, we started to build the organization. And I would think that we are now at the stage of a fairly, you know, a kind of adolescent stage of the build-up. We're not adults yet. We're there, but we're not crawling as well. We have managed to put ourselves on the map, and hence you know more about us than you did before. You know, and therefore, we are trying in every way. On the issue of the annual reports, I can tell you, Honorable Chairperson, you will definitely have one before the end of this financial year. And we are trying to look at what the law allows us, whether we can do it, you know, concurrently or together, but the CFO will take us more in terms of that and what are the resources we're putting in place. On the issue of the enhancement of governance, you know, what do we do on a quarterly basis to improve the audit outcomes? Look, one of the issues that we've had in the organization is the fact that there was no sustained governance to look at all areas of work, you know, on a continuous basis. But currently what we do is we have honorable chair and members what we call a monthly reconciliation of activities and processes within the department. So we're just not looking at quarterly audit outcomes, we are looking at monthly submissions, to the point that we are now way above the compliance issues in terms of submitting our quarterly reports. And as a matter of fact, on three areas out of the five areas we report on, in the last financial year, we have actually overperformed. Right, so the number of people that have come to us for benefit maybe medical examination, the number of people we have actually paid compensation to, and for the number of outreach activities that we have actually done is overperformed. Our backlog rests in the certification committee for reasons which I explained, that if we do not have a chairperson, the committee actually comes to a standstill. So, and those are the areas that we are struggling with. But on other areas, yes, we have got a quarterly performance, and the our finance deputy commissioner will explain to that, as well as including, you know, who is accountable for performance and non-performance. I answered the question on what informed the 249 control mines, and I think, you know, will we be able to deal with more? I've come to that. Let me answer the question on the involvement of external service providers, private doctors, public facilities. Let me say, Honorable Chairperson, it was an embarrassment to say the least. One, to not have a proper database of who we were dealing with. Because you're supposed to have service providers in all nine provinces and the outside neighboring countries, so that when an ex-miner is faced with a difficulty or wants an assessment done, they are able to go to the service provider and get their benefit medical examinations done. So we now have we have found out that we've got 186 of them, and the majority of the 186, let me add, honorable chairperson and members, are actually public hospitals. They're not all private doctors. They are a few private doctors, but the majority are public hospitals. And we are actually taking the roadshow starting from the 9th of September to visit all of them to actually get an updated service level agreement signed with them to ensure that they are on board in terms of the changes, the business process, re-engineering within organization, and for people to be on top of that issue. And once that is done, I think it must be public knowledge that you too must have a list of those service providers. So in your communities, if you know that somebody has a problem, and they are, let me explain to you a challenge we have. We have a demonstration site in Mombasa, but if we've got a patient in Port Elizabeth right now, do you know we don't have a service provider between Port Elizabeth and East London? And it's purely urban, you know. I'm not just talking about the outlying areas. I mean, shame, because there are facilities that we can refer our people to. So that is what the organization in its vision wants to ensure, that we build up. We build up and we try to make the service available. Dr. Zungu will answer the question on the medical form, etc., you know, on the TV and the challenges that are there. And on the a question on compensation share that came from yourself, you know, the illiterate workers, the rural areas and the loss of confusion, I cannot but agree with you more. Because these organizations that are springing up everywhere is actually causing more confusion to the workers than you may think about. And they actually tell them about compensation amounts that are beyond what we normally pay, and promise them all kinds of things, you know, that are not happening, and thereby lure these people in terms of the very little resources they've got into what is happening. We just completed in last year, in March of this year, we completed the Deputy President's project on the Eastern Cape, ex-mine workers, and we actually paid from the Department of Health, we paid like 70% of those we found. However, we can't find 3,995, that's the correct number. We can't find them, because the address that they gave us at the time is, for instance, an ex-miner that's in Solo Village in the Eastern Cape. But that person now has moved to Queenstown. And you'll find that Department of Home Affairs can't give you the correct, you know, movement of this person. The most reliable information we got in terms of the traceability of the ex-miner is through SASA, because some of these people are over 60 years old and they are collecting a pension. So we got most reliable information from them. We even ran the database chair with the Department of Home Affairs, and the addresses, sadly to say, the addresses that are coming out are just nowhere to be found. Because communities have also undergone change. So you'll find what was a village at one stage is now like a township, you know, and that address they gave is no longer there. So we're having that challenge, and we would share with your kind permission, if you are willing, in your community outreach work, also give you the 3,900 something. And if you know these people, you know, we can identify them quicker. But we've got the great support from the chief, the local ward councillors, our job supporters, all of them who are helping to train the ex-mine workers. And not all of them are there. On Tuesday, we are returning back here to Cape Town, because we've got 2,500 workers in Khayelitsha that we must go and address, because these are the cross border between the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape and the Northwest, you know, who are all here in the Western Cape. But however they are in Khayelitsha and Langa. And we've got to go out there and identify them and find out, you know, if they haven't had their medicals done, how do we do their medicals, etc., and how do we enter them on the system. So that's part of our outreach work here. So we want to agree with you, and we want to partner with you in terms of work that we can be doing together. And I think that's the outreach that you've asked in two separate questions. I think I've answered the question on when these posts will be filled and how do we increase the staff. We're in the process of doing that. So we're just waiting on DPSA to come, and the CFO will answer that as well. And in terms of, Dr. Zungu will talk about the countries outside of South Africa and the kind of work we're doing over there. And if both parents pass on, who is the beneficiary? I think there's an expectation that's being created amongst people that's also very unrealistic. Remember, if a minor, ex-minor, has not been registered on our system, and the person passes on, there's nothing we can do. As many beneficiaries as they can have, there's nothing we can do. We needed to have the lungs and hearts taken out, but it's also a cultural issue, you know. So that's the kind of work we're doing there. So we are dealing with both customary and common law marriages. And yes, if there is polygamous marriages and more than one beneficiary chair, I can tell you it's quite a struggle, but we are dealing with it. We're dealing with all of them, because you can't deal with one. Because sometimes we've got instances where people have come to us and they've got like about 30 beneficiaries. So if you take that small amount of money, you've got to spread it across the 30 people in order to get to them. Chair, I'd like my colleagues to just answer the balance of the question.
Sorry, my humblest apology. The role of TEBA. TEBA has bought any information, which is also creating a problem. So when they reply, if they can, they can also address that.
Okay, let me just touch on the TEBA issue. For the information of the members, the database for ex-miners and miners currently rests with TEBA. And they have, this is 4 years ago, and they bought up an entire data base from the Chamber of Mines. It was bought over from the Chamber of Mines. So it's now in the hands of private business. And however, there have been attempts made even from the office of the Deputy President, and I'm hoping, Chair, that you can equally follow it up for us, is a meeting in which we actually want to take over that database as a state. I think it belongs to us. It actually does not belong to a private organization. These are workers. When you ask the workers as to why their data is there, they themselves don't understand it. You understand? So I think it was an exploitation of the poor and the illiterate, and they became vulnerable to the situation. The difficulty we have now is that the Act demands that if somebody has to be paid, they got to have their fingerprints and their labor history. The only person who has their fingerprints and labor history is TEBA. And when they go to TEBA, they've got to pay an amount of money to access this information, money that they do not have. Chair, we have been at pains to meet with TEBA to get this. And I would think the greatest favor we could ever achieve from this meeting is for you to put equal pressure for that database to be returned to its rightful owners, which is the state.
Thank you. Hand over to whoever is there.
Dr.
Zungu.
Thank you, Chair. I think Ms. Padete has covered most of the questions. I just want to also reiterate that she's already said that the work that we do is actually part of an intervention at this point. Since August 2012, the Minister, through the Office of the DG, realized all the problems that Honourable Member and Ndaba raised, that the two entities or components within the department were not operating normally, in that they were not producing annual reports and they were getting disclaimers constantly. And as of that time, then the new management team had been put in place to try and solve the problems that exist. Hence, the new strategic plans and the annual performance plans that had been approved and have been through this committee. I'm just going to try and answer some of these questions. The first question I'm going to go to was just to add on the question of half of the mines being controlled and others not controlled. It is because in terms of the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act, there's a committee called the Risk Committee. That Risk Committee is the one that determines if mines are controlled or not controlled. And that is done based on the risks that miners are exposed to in the place where they work. And that risk could be coming from dust that they find themselves exposed to when they are busy dealing with mining, but it also includes other things like vapors and gases that causes disease, especially disease related to the cardiorespiratory system in the lungs and the heart. So that committee has failed to operate from the year 1998, hence the intervention that was taken in 2012. And since 2012, we've been working together with the Department of Mineral Resources to resuscitate that committee. And I'm glad to let the committee know that that committee is fully functional at the moment. And in fact, it has had already two meetings in the past 6 months. And we're going to have a special meeting in November going forward. And that committee is chaired by the Chief Inspector of the Department of Mineral Resources. The other questions I'm going to deal with are related part of it I'm going to answer, and I think Mr. Mlaut is going to answer it. It's related to the 150 beneficiaries out of the 10,000 that are assessed. Why do we have 150 beneficiaries? In terms of the 150, I think you're referring to those who are getting pension, and those where beneficiaries that are getting pension because of the Act has been amended, so we no longer have people going forward that are getting pension from this Act. So people are getting a lump sum at once. But even when we assess 10,000 people for the benefit medical examinations, not all of them qualify to get 10,000 only means that the doctors found, that only means that the doctors received claims from people who think that they may have a disease that requires compensation from us. And then the doctors sit and adjudicate if indeed these people qualify or not. And then the doctors, after seeing these people, they may bring that number down to even 10, because some of them do not have a disease that is covered by our act. But in some instances, you also find that they have a disease that is covered by the Department of Labor, and Ms. Padete has correctly alluded to that. Then we refer them to the Department of Labor, which is a tedious process, and hopefully the process of amalgamating the act is going to take place soon. In terms of, I think, the elephant in the room, which is the certification committee, which is leading to the backlogs at MPOD especially. It is an issue that is related to the problem of the doctors. The certification committee is the committee that is chaired by the director of the MPOD. The director of the MPOD has to be a medical doctor. And we have, in the past 24 months, failed to attract a director to stay there for more than 6 months. So every time a director resigns, then we have to start the process where we have to get a minister to reappoint a person, but we have to find a person first. And we are not able to find that person. And that creates a problem, and that leads to us not being able to clear the backlogs that are there. As things stand at the moment, we have a backlog of about 8,000 files that we are going through, but we are confident that we will be able to do those in the space of about 6 months or less. In terms of the certification committee and the failing of the medical bureau to submit annual reports, I must also raise with this committee that it is actually the new management that was working for the intervention since 2012 that raised it with this committee that MPOD had not been submitting annual reports, because it had passed everybody, including this committee and the Auditor General, that because the Act says that the director, which is certainly me at the moment, is supposed to produce an annual report on a yearly basis to Parliament, but it had not been happening. But now we decided that because it has not been happening for almost a decade, we asked for a pardon in 2013, and we asked that we will produce a consolidated annual report that will start from the year 2000 up to the year when we finish now. It's there in the small report that we submitted here. And as we did that, we found that when we were busy preparing the report, which we are doing at the moment, and the report will be out before the end of this calendar year, we found that there was no information at the MPOD for the year 2000 up to the year 2003. And it's very difficult to do an annual report with that information. So we had to... So we had to also, you know, write again to ask, you know, to be pardoned for that period of time, which we then corrected, and the report will be coming soon. And following that, we'll have annual reports on an ongoing basis. So that is the plan around that. The other question I think I have to answer, or answer the MPOD annual report, is the medical form for TB. The question that was asked by the chair was that when people go to work, usually they get a medical form before they start work as to how their state of health in many workplaces, including, I hope, here in Parliament. In terms of the work that we do, we have found our act over the years used to do that for the mining industry, and it used to be called the red ticket. And everybody who worked in the mine, including a clerk, would go through the medical bureau for occupational disease for this red ticket. But it was amended, and it was taken over to the Mine Health and Safety Act. So now it's done by the Department of Mineral Resources. So it's no longer done by us. So I think in terms of the next question, or the question about what are we doing to cover, you know, and to find beneficiaries in the peripheries, including in the countries outside South Africa. If you look in our strategic plan, we have added there that currently we are working together with the countries that are labor sending, which is Swaziland, Lesotho, and to some extent Mozambique, as well as our developmental partners for resources in the main and technical expertise because of the shortage of resources in our units. So we are doing what we call mapping studies. With these mapping studies, we are going out and then we are finding where miners are, that is to start with, so that we can know where physically they are, and then we find out who exactly are these miners and who do they live with and what services do they have access to. For example, what clinics, hospitals are closer to them, so that if we have to provide services to them, then we can communicate with those services next to them. And these are ongoing. We started since 2012 when we came in to try and resuscitate the MBO-GCCOD. We started with mapping the Carltonville, which is the West Rand area in Gauteng. We went into Eastern Cape or Tambo region. We are now in Swaziland with our partners, and we will be going to Lesotho soon. But there's a bigger plan after we've done those preliminary studies to then come and sit and consolidate to think, how do we now roll out a once-off mapping process that is going to cover all the other areas? Because we didn't want to just start with the whole country and the labor-sending countries without having made sure that our methods are appropriate and we'll be able to find the information that we need. So that is what we are doing to do that. And we will be finding those people. I think that covers the question again on how do we trace the beneficiaries, because that the mapping study will also do that in terms of mapping the beneficiaries. I think I've covered all the questions I had to answer.
Chair, I think you can ask the CFO first to add a second one, Mr. Monica.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I thought it was just important to contextualize the financial statements and the reason why the report whenever submitted. There were basically three areas of issues raised by the AG. First one was valuation, or the actual valuation of the funds. Second one was on revenues, and thirdly was on the system. So on the revenue one, it comes down to the question was asked about, are we sure we actually recover all the revenue from all the mines? So there was an issue on that, and I think we've gone quite a while, you know, to resolve that. Second thing on the system was to say, is our system of recording expenditure and revenue, is that functional and is it up to date? That was always a qualification issue on our statements, and we've dealt with that as well. We've updated the PASTEL, and we feel confident that the system has been updated the last sort of 18 months. The one that's been difficult was the actual valuation. And because that's important, is it goes back to what's your continued liability, what do you provide for as a liability in your books, which then says, as Shireen said, that if everybody comes and they do a claim against the funds, what would that value be? So the CCOD determined that value to be about 4 billion or something, but it was never based on source documents, basically going back to the files. And this is the exercise of the merging of the files and making sure our files were correct. So although the AG could verify that the methodology used by our service provider was correct, they couldn't vouch for the source documents and for the source of office. And for that reason, we received these disclaimers for the last few financial years. So the AG has completed the financials for 10-11 and to some part for 11-12. But the audit committee was very explicit to say that before we actually submit them, we need to make sure that we've got, now we can go back to source document and get that valuation verified. So, Chair, to do that, we also understand that this thing requires a professional accountant and a very technical skill. We've been trying to source that skill. We've not been successful. We've now resorted to going back to the market and to find from our big four accounting companies a number of CVs which we intend interviewing within the next week to appoint a professional accountant to assist with this process. And the major part of this is going to be to ensure that we churn out those financial statements, at least two of them, by the end of the financial year. We should then, by implication, also allow the CCOD to churn out the annual reports based on those financials. So, although the annual reports might be put out, it wouldn't have the financial statements within it, and essentially that wouldn't be an annual report. So I think that the process is to deal with this actual evaluation, to source the capacity of a professional accountant to assist with that, and also to engage with the agents. Otherwise, you sort of get bullied into a position where you're able to also argue for a better outcome. So I just thought of giving you those insights and the three issues as giving the CCOD issues of financials.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I'll be doing just two questions, but I just wanted to add on what Mr. said about the contribution of the mining sector. The 249 mines that we have, these are the control mines that we can set. So the current act is the previous Mnemocracy Act. In that act, we find that it allowed for pensions to be paid. But when the new act was implemented, the Zuma Act did away with the pensions. But those people who qualified in terms of the old act will continue to pay. And the contribution of those payments is just transferred from the Department of Health. But the mines we have 249, that's what we inherited. These are previously controlled mines, I think, going back to 1984, 1998. And some of them have fallen by the wayside, you know. And some of the mines, as explained, they've closed, you know. But what has happened now? Because now it's a disaster center, the inspector unit. The purpose of the inspector unit is to go out, you know, to the mines that are controlled, where they don't send us the assessments. Assessments basically tells us how many receipts they work, and then we can do a calculation that they are paying the appropriate levy that they're supposed to pay. So those mines that were are controlled, that are not submitting, were able to use the control, the inspector unit to go out and engage with management. Just last week, Friday, we went out to a mine in the last time we submitted assessments, they didn't pay, maybe it was 2004. We engaged with them, and they're in the process. The mine was taken over in 2004, and the new management said they were not aware, you know, that they have to pay levies to the Competition Commissioner. We engaged with them, they're in the process of going to the documents, we have several meetings, and probably we would recover some levies. Just to give an example, in May, a mine in Bokopi, 10 million levies, you know, which we shouldn't expect. So, just linking what the people said with the actuarial valuation, the purpose of the actuarial valuation helps in terms of determining the rate that the mine can pay. There was a court case previously between the Department of Health and the Chamber of Mines, where the department won the case, even on appeal, that the mines are responsible for paying the cost of feeding ex mine workers. You know. So once a proper actuarial valuation has been done, it will tell us what is our potential liability, and that informs the levies that must change, and we can go through the legal process of informing myself. As from this day, here are the new rates that we must pay. In terms of the pensions, I think Dr. Zung has touched on that. We've got currently 150 pensioners that are working on a monthly basis, and you know, these are old people, mostly elderly white people, and you know, some of them die, and the number of pensioners increases, so eventually we will not have pensioners. Those are the remaining 150. And on the last issue relating to where there are multiple partners, how do we deal with that? Well, we had problems because somebody will come and say, I'm the wife of so-and-so with partner. And we don't have to. So what we have done now, we encourage people to go to the Department of Justice where there are issues with letters of authority. We had a case where there were two women came forward, they know each other, they were married to the same guy, and we asked them to sign a sort of an agreement and go to the police station and make an affidavit that they were speaking to money. So what we do, we use the Department of Justice, they get letters of authorization to say so-and-so can receive the beneficiary discrimination from the deceased person. And also, what is also interesting, that even especially with the consulate of Lesotho is actively involved in terms of payment of people, beneficiaries of late minor. The same with the Botswana government. We are in contact with consulates. They give us names of people to say, can we check, and we go to our system and we tell them we have received documentation for this person or documentation missing, and we try and help and speed up the process. But just briefly, in terms of the financial, I think, you know, the new management team came in 2012, but the delay has helped us to understand the business. You know, what are the challenges in sight? You know, when we came in, payments have been made, they were not properly batched. But what we have done now is batch all the payments for this biggest financial year. There are still few legacy issues that we need to change, but, you know, now we know how much was paid, how much the rejection file was paid, and we never followed up. We managed to follow that up. And if you look at the payments we made in 2012-2013, we paid over 139 million. We paid 3,000 and I think it was over 3,000 paid. If compared to the previous 2 years, I think it was 1,700. So it wasn't. But we now understand what the challenges are and better, we're in a better position to prepare for the quality. And we also appreciate that.
Thank you very much. I didn't want to congratulate you on your work until we get responses from you. And responses from my side are telling that you are hard at work with the challenges that are there on how you have found the institution, and hoping that you are not going to jump the ship when it's too hot. We are confident, I hope on behalf of the committee, as much as I have not been consulting, I think I've got that responsibility of saying to you, please ensure that with the challenges that you are having and with the questions that we have been asking, are questions that really want to ensure that we assist, because it's quite a very sensitive area with a number of issues that are there. We obviously, as you know, that we've got the responsibility of playing oversight in whatever way. As Honorable Mahlalela have said, it's quite a confusion. Are you an entity? Are you what? We have responded to that. The last question on my side, which I hope you will be, whether it's our responsibility or that of the Department of Health, that you are faced with turnover on key strategic positions, and you are saying it's because of the remuneration package, don't you think it's important of you to make a recommendation either to the Department of Health to say, for us to be able to be focused and sustain and do our work diligently, we think that the package of this must be relooked so that we're able to retain. Because I'm finding it very difficult for an institution of your caliber of having this turnover on such key strategic work and key strategic. Fortunately, the department is here. It's your homework, maybe our own homework too, when we're clarified on a number of things. There are two hands that are, of course, now it's not two, it's three, and it's going to be four. But these are the three last hands that we are then going to just to get, and I'm requesting honorable members just to be short. It will be Honorable Volmik, it will be Honorable Ndaba, and lastly it will be Honorable myself, in that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll just be brilliant to the point. Just two quick follow-ups. One, with regards to reformulation of you know, the compensation, not just in terms of levies, but also in terms of the compensation that's given to minors. I mean, surely we all appreciate that is not So the question is, have you thought about this? What process of reformulation of actual compensation packages will be done? And then also in terms of then going back to those who have been compensated, I mean, how far back will you go in terms of ensuring that some kind of backdating so that everybody can be brought up to the same level? The second question I have is, what percentage of people waiting for compensation actually passed away before they received that compensation? And of that, how many of the family members who, or the beneficiaries who were to receive those compensations are still awaiting that compensation? I think that's a key issue around equity. And then finally, in terms of tracing and reaching and kind of, you know, obviously tracing X minus, there is a re-engineering of the primary healthcare system that's going on. You have community health workers, for example, who could perhaps be used in tracing. You have district clinical specialists, family physicians who can perhaps be used in medical examination. Have you thought about how to integrate your work into the PhD re-engineering agenda? Thank you.
Honorable Ndaba.
Thanks, Chair. I think Honorable Board Meeting covered me. I think partly, Chair, I'm covered by Dr. Volmik in terms of the issues that he has just raised now. But Chair, I think we're agreeing with them in terms of TEBA, you know, that they must get back that data, you know, because there's no way that you know, TEBA can own data of our people, and we can't even do, they can't even do anything without that data. But I think in terms of tracing, Chair, Dr. Welmick is correct that we do have community healthcare workers, you know, in fact even CDWs. You know, I think they can use them also, you know. And I, with regard to the issue of the director, it's a problem. I think they must do something. Whether it's because of the remuneration or somebody is threatening or whatever, but I think that's critical, Chair. They must take it very urgent and serious because they can't live without that position being occupied. Thank you.
Honorable Meister.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's a pity that maybe one should understand that when you work in the industry of health, it's not like any other industry where you can afford to postpone something because you can't reverse the consequences. So if somebody dies because you owe him 10 rand, then he could have used it to go to the team and he said you didn't know how to pay me for when to see. So I think maybe some little advice is that there is a lot of money that you could be collecting and paying our people. That's following all the money that are not paying. That is simple. You know, it's such a starting point to collect this money. So when you have this money, you can give it to somebody. But if you can't even collect what is due, then there is something problematic. You have to change your method of working. Collect that money, pay the people. You can be able to retain those people who are going to sign off, because you can pay them while you have the money. But if you don't have the money, you can't. There is no retention strategy here. So nobody signs off, and people are dying waiting. And so I hope you understand what I'm trying to allude to. So, and there is no reason why if you have that money, you can't appoint actuaries and doctors to sign off. All those things will follow. Right? And you can even sponsor people to learn and send them to go and learn and get the skills with which you can afford. But here it's not just working, we are working, guys, we are trying to. It's a matter of urgency, because anybody who dies today, you can't say, hey, if we only did it yesterday. So if you need help, we are there bounded with us, if we can, we shall try to make it possible for you to do what you're supposed to do. Maybe ASP, as soon as possible. It's not a matter of saying, well, next year we'll give you a financial statement or end of the year. I'll tell you what, that shows there is no accountability, or there was no accountability. And you are collecting money, using it, and say maybe somebody collected something, maybe somebody didn't collect it. There's just no accountability. If you were saying where we started here is what we have, we are accounting for what we had when we started here, we will check the backlog going backwards. But you say where? No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure. It's just a little caveat. If we start there, maybe when we meet again, we'll get something much more substantive, say, well, this is what, how far we've got, and please help us with this, and so that we can pass over this hurdle. Thank you.
All right. Can we respond to the last questions?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members, for those questions. Chair, let me start with your question in terms of the turnover. Are we making a recommendation, and you know, are we revisiting a package, etc.? Look, we're looking at a multiplicity of issues. Let me just give you an example. In the Eastern Cape, for instance, at the demonstration site, we've currently got patients booked up to December because that's the demand at the one side. And so what we've done is we've gone into serious discussions with the government of the Eastern Cape together with the academic institutions, and we were able through those discussions to increase the doctors there from 1 to 4. We actually now have 4 full-time doctors at the UMTASA demonstration site, so that we do not have a booking system, you know. People must come in and be treated, and they must be given that, because if we're going to have a waiting system until December, can you imagine, we're only then going to start to process claims. And, you know, it's January and December are literally dead months, so we want to try to improve that. So the Eastern Cape has actually come to the rescue, and the academic institutions. In terms of the CDWs and all of that, Chair and members, we have used them all. The biggest challenge we have now is the actual location of people, not just in one spot. It's like saying somebody was in Solo and they now gone to Queenstown, you know. So we won't know that until we starting to actively track and trace. Through the Global Fund, let me say, we also have 9 inspectors that have been appointed for us, and they actually start work with us in the month of September. And they're going to also actively assist, because they're coming from the various provinces. So we have plans afoot to work with what you are asking for, you know. The challenge we have is the retention of the doctor at the head office, you know, the Bloemfontein office. But the others are actually coming. And what we also found is that, you know, when you attract a very young doctor there, they're also on this career path movement, you know. So you come and then you're gone, you know. And so we're trying to see, those are some of the recommendations that we are looking at. But certainly, we take your point, and we've got to look at that in terms of the issue. But I'm not sure if, Chair, I may have missed telling you, but we have identified a director. And the director is in the process, I'm not sure if the DDG mentioned it, but he's in the process of being appointed now in September, if I'm right, Dr. Ahmed. In September. So we're hoping that this person that we have found is actually going to stay, you know. So that's the basic issue. On Dr. Cummings, on the reformulation of the compensation and so forth, look, we're looking at a reformulation of various issues based on the amendment of the Act. Because I mentioned one issue to you, the travel compensation. The other is the compensation to service providers. The third is the compensation to people. Should we continue to pay people 40,000 when we can move it to 50,000? But remember, for as long as we have 249 control mines out of 1,300, increasing the amount is going to make the fund run into a deficit. And then you'll have other complications coming, that if I pay you in 2014 50 instead of 40, then it's also a retrogressive payment to the others, which adds up financially in terms of the burden. So our biggest prize in that is to actually declare all mines controlled mines, you know, to ensure that all 1,300 mines pay into the fund,
yeah,
and that all these beneficiaries must actually benefit from the process. So our view is not to deal with it piecemeal,
mm-hmm,
but we need to go for the big kill, if I to use that word, you know, to say all mines control mines, all mines pay levy.
Mm-hmm.
Why should only 249 pay out of 1,300? The others get away, you know, with that kind of area. I trust, you know, that's kind of answering that. In
terms of a percentage on deceased and beneficiaries, look, it's a challenge for us currently. Because what we are bringing to your attention is the fact that we've got a huge number of ex-minors that cannot be traced, you know, through the system. Because when they were brought into the country to work in the mines, they came from outside of South Africa as well as within South Africa. But when they started to incubate disease or were affected by disease, they were sent home. And, you know, you would have seen even a special assignment program that we dealt with sent home to die, you know, because they've gone home, nobody cares for them. Honorable members and chair, let me assure you that we traced a 97-year-old man in the Eastern Cape in a rural village after weeks of trying to find him, only to pay him a paltry 2,700 rand as a once-off compensation. And the man died a week later. And but your thoughts are exactly the same as ours. When you go and actually find the ex-miners, the tragedy is worse than we would even imagine. Because that's the situation. For somebody in a rural village, they just don't have any medical services at all, you know. And you know, those of you coming from the Eastern Cape, in terms of the distance between places, it's just too vast. So we are, and we would try to, unless my other colleagues have some numbers that they can share with you, but on an actual percentage, we're not there yet. Right. And so we are looking in terms of your third area, which was raised by the other honorable member, in terms of the CDW, etc. We have used them. In fact, Chair and members, our greatest support has come from the traditional leaders and the chiefs of the area. Because these leaders in the community know people.
Yeah.
Because if you went to Flagstaff and you met the chief there, he will pull out all those people from Flagstaff. You know, we did the same in Bizana, in the whole of the Pondoland area, because that's where the greatest concentration is.
Mm.
Now, we piggybacked on the idea of modeling our demonstration site at the NHI district. In reality, we should not have launched a demonstration site in Mthatha. We should have done it in Pondoland, because that's where the majority come from in the Eastern Cape. And we should be going to the Northwest and to Greenland, because we've also got people. But there's a difference between the active mining areas and the areas where the ex-mine workers come from.
Yeah.
So you'll find in Carltonville, it's very active mining. So you're not finding many ex-miners. However, Northwest is using Carltonville because there are a number of ex-people there, but we're also looking at workers coming from Swaziland and Lesotho into those areas. And in Mpumalanga, Chair, we want to tell you that we've got a big crisis because we've got asbestosis claims of many people in Swaziland that are coming through, and they're coming to the Buslas area, Ilokwetini. We can't, you know, we've got to start dealing with them on a much wider scale. Oh yes, we can't agree with you more. I think we have the same fight with Teva. In fact, out of this committee, I can tell you what our greater fights are. So we can trace that. I've covered the issue of the tracing and the position of the director. Honorable member, I can't agree with you more. You know, there's no way we want to see a patient die before the patient gets better. So I think my answer to your question is that we should not be telling you we're trying our best. We should be doing this. Right. And but we want honourable members to please appreciate our challenge. You know, if somebody was there before and they haven't left you records, where do you start?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're literally starting a house from its beginning. Therefore, I'm saying to you, in the adolescent stage, and all the colleagues that are here with us today are the people who are really putting in the 150% to try to get that done. At one stage, 2 or 3 years ago, we were only paying less than 1,000 people a year. We've moved that up 3 times now, Chair, and our beneficiaries, and together with your help, if we can continue to spread the word, the beneficiaries must come for their payments. We don't want to invest this money. We don't want to keep it in a reserve. We want to pay. You know, so I think that kind of thing must come there. So we hear you, sir, and you know, in terms of accountability, yes, we remain liable. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I think we... there are areas where we would need, we also need some information as the committee. One of that will definitely need your program on your outreach. I'm one of those that are interested. And because people out there are playing with the emotions of our people.
Mm-hmm.
But as we will need that outreach, we want to be part of that so that there is no, we're able to, as the portfolio committee, able to I don't want to assist, but also to get the first-hand information on exactly where, And in that, outside the meeting, I'll tell you the area. Because I don't want to mention things here and people will think that I'm after their organizations. I'll tell you the area in the Eastern Cape where people have been confused and where people are told that your money is seated at Bishop, go and take it at Bishop. When in fact we know maybe it is also a weakness on the side of the legislature. So all that, including the areas that we have talked about, the challenges in Mpumalanga, in Free State, in the neighboring areas, but please give us the on time, know that we have got that the challenge of other commitments, but we need that outreach. Yes, we will we'll try and assist, speak with the relative offices in terms of the issues of Teba. It's only that we don't have time because we are allowed to write questions and request some more information, because I would have loved to get more detailed information on the role of the trade union, of the trade union in the mining sector in as far as these areas are concerned. What have been the weaknesses there, because the Department of Labor, ourselves, health, and whatever. So with that, thank you. You have been, maybe I can say you have really been brutally honest with us. There may be some other issues. I will know that you will tread very carefully because the Department of Health is here. But thank you very much to make us aware and then be able to, on how we move forward on this issue and keep up the good work. I don't want to tell you when we may visit your offices, but as we are playing, we'll be playing our oversight, we think that rest assured we will knock through the Department of Health. Having said that, travel home safely, and with that, I'll request the members of the Portfolio Committee, as they are leaving, to just leave behind, because we are to deal with the issues of the committee. Thank you very much. Oh yes. Thank you. I've been saying all the things, and you have got your smoke.